from one great song to another. Your favorite music is right here, Meridian FM.
And I am so pleased to be joined by John Wright this morning. Good morning, John.
Oh, good morning.
Lovely to talk to you. And what's the weather like with you?
It's beautiful, beautifully autumnal. So it's a light drizzle, overcast, about 15 degrees. So perfect weather.
Oh, well, that's a lovely way of describing the weather. I'm looking out my window and I'm going to say it's wet and dreary. But anyway, so where do you come from?
Well, I am sat in darkest Dorset at the moment, still on the south coast, but quite a long way from you.
You are. You certainly are, but you are coming our way, aren't you?
I am.
Can we go back in your early life and just find out what you've been up to?
Oh, gosh, how far back?
Well, let's say when you left school.
I can go before that. I took a great interest in fungi. From the age of about 14, 15, when I probably should have been chasing girls and things. But I took an interest in fungi instead. A lot easier to find.
Less trouble.
Yeah, and a lot less trouble, unless you get it wrong, of course. And I used to go to the New Fire. I lived in Portsmouth, so it's halfway between us. And I used to go with my friend whose dad owned the model shop, and we used to wander around the New Forest flying aeroplanes, model aeroplanes. And I started to see fungi there, and my friend's dad was a teacher as well, so he just said, oh, this is that. And I just got fascinated by the whole thing, and that was over 50 years ago. So it stayed with me for my whole life.
Really? Okay. So I know you go foraging now, but I believe you were a cabinet maker.
Oh, yes. 30 years a cabinet maker. The worst job in the best and the worst job in the world. It's a lovely thing to do, but you live in total poverty.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's a terrible thing. It was a lovely thing to do, and I'm proud of what I did.
But then, as I say, the foraging took over.
Yeah, it was really the sort of fungi gone mad, because I took an interest just in this sort of academic. Well, to be absolutely honest, it's more of a nerdy anoraki interest in fungi. You're just trying to find as many different species as I could, and just it's really quite hard to identify them.
Well, no, your interest in foraging, and you've given up your cabinet making.
Yeah, that's right. So I carried on with the cabinet making, and then I thought I'd start taking people out on walks, teaching them what I've learned about fungi. That became very successful, and I did local nature reserves, and then Hugh Fernie Whittingstall was looking for someone local to take him mushroom hunting, and everything has sort of taken over since then. He's been very kind to me and enabled me to write books, which is a lovely thing to do.
So when was that when you got involved with River Cottage?
It's about 18 years ago, I think. Okay. About 2000, yes. I took Hugh truffle hunting. I did not think we were going to find a truffle. I had found them there before, mostly those that have been dug up by squirrels. But my goodness, we did find one on the day, and no one was more amazed than me, and everyone was very pleased, and I think they kept me after that success.
Really? I mean, that must be quite hard, surely, finding truffles here.
There are a lot of truffles. There are a lot of truffles around, but because they're growing underground, you can't see them. So you really do need a dog. You can use a pig, but pigs are pretty unmanageable things. So a well-trained dog will find them. Now, I went out with a truffle hunter. I cannot say who. I cannot say where. I will say it was in England. And he, or indeed she, had a dog. And this dog found 35 truffles in 35 minutes.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Of course, you couldn't tell us, because otherwise everybody would be flying over there.
Yeah, I didn't tell you that at all. That was just a figment of everyone's imagination.
Yeah. Oh, wow, how amazing was that? That does surprise me, I've got to say. Now, when you're looking for your mushrooms and you come across a lot of other fungi, I mean, you must have learned the difference, because I look at them and I think, well, is that a mushroom? Can I take it home and eat it?
Yeah, it's not easy. People do get very anxious about it. We have lost the sort of folk knowledge, or I'm not sure actually the British ever had it. The the continental Europeans much more so. The Italians, the French, certainly Germans, Eastern Europe, particularly Russia. You know, your people are brought up knowing the difference between things. They go out with their grandmother and their mother, and they go and and just find stuff and they learn it. We never really had it over here. And, people would pick field mushrooms and horse mushrooms. Really, that was about it. I'd like to think it's fashionable now to pick mushrooms, and people are very interested in doing it. But of course, they're slightly scary because there are probably 30 deadly poisonous species out there. Some you see every time you go out. So random picking is, you are doomed if you pick randomly, really, because things can go desperately wrong. It's a horrible thing to happen. I've picked some. I've eaten 130 different species of fungi. I've never had as much as a stomachache, but I'm extremely careful. I'm not particularly clever. I'm just observant, and I just keep working at it. But people don't. I mean, there are 5, 6, 7,000 species of fungi in this country. You do not need to know them at all. You just need to learn a few of the really easy ones to identify, and you'll be there. Things like the giant puffball, they're unmistakable. Hedgehog mushroom, that is unmistakable. It's got sort of chamois leather, beige colour, irregular cap, and little spines underneath. You know, there's really, and a stem, must have a stem, is unmistakable. Parasol mushrooms, they're easy. Even field mushrooms and horse mushrooms, they're easy. So you just learn a few of these easy species, maybe 2 or 3 a year. You know, within a few years, you'll be an expert.
And you shouldn't be dead either by eating a poisonous one.
It shouldn't be.
Going back to the puff mushrooms, I get a lot of those in the field near me. But you've got to pick them at the right time, because if they get too old, if you kick them, they just go into a puff of powder, don't they?
Yes. Young and firm. There's nothing else, no other way of putting it, really. They need to be pure white, because this is a giant puffball, and there must be about 20 species of puffball, most of them much smaller than that. All puffballs are edible. Provided, first of all, that they are puffballs and not earthballs or immature mushrooms or toadstools. They must be puffballs as well. It's ways of finding out. If you cut them in half, you should just see white if you don't, and a very thin skin on the outside.
Right.
So they must be puffballs and they must be young. So when you get your puffball, you say, well, that's really definitely a puffball. Just have a look to make sure it's white. It should be firm. If it's all squidgy, and certainly if it's starting to sticky, it's not going off, it's maturing. When you see that mass of brown dust, those are the spores. It's actually done what it intended to do. It hasn't gone off, it hasn't rotted or anything. It's producing its spores. It's a spore-producing structure. If we want to eat it, we have to pick it before it gets to that stage. So young, firm, white, that's what it needs to be.
That's what it needs to be. Now, just going back to our field mushrooms, that's the most common one I think that people collect, I would say, if you're not in the know, obviously, because you feel a bit safer with the ordinary field mushroom. Should you cut them or should you pull them?
If you are sure it's a field mushroom or a horse mushroom, then there's nothing wrong with cutting them because it saves getting a lot of dirt. You're not digging up the field. It doesn't really damage the mycelium, which is what the fungus grows from, or the mushroom grows from. In fact, the mycelium, which is the stuff underground, the massive white fibres, that was the actual fungus itself. Just cut them. To save getting a lot of dirt home, can I just say something about field mushrooms? People thinking they're picking field mushrooms is the cause of more poisonings than anything else. I don't want to spoil it for everybody, but there is something called the yellow stainer, yellow staining mushroom. It's Agaricus xanthodermis. Xanthos is yellow and dermis is skin. It's very closely related to the field mushroom, the horse mushroom. They're all in the genus Agaricus. It's the same as the ones you buy in the shops, which is Agaricus bisporus. But Agaricus xanthodermis is known as the yellow stainer. If you find one, look just like a field mushroom. If you scratch the edge of the cap, or if you squeeze the quite large ring, or if you have dug it up, you scratch the base of the stem, it goes brilliant chromium yellow within 1 second.
Oh.
Now, that is not deadly poisonous, but it will give you a couple of days off work, not a nice couple of days off work.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Very good diet food, but really not recommended.
Well, I think we're going to recommend that everybody comes out with you on a foraging day, just to be safe, really, I think.
Yeah, it really does help. I never really learned from anybody because I've been doing it for so long. There wasn't anyone to teach me, and there weren't any books when I started, so I had to do the best I could with what little I had. But it's much easier now. There's foragers who are prepared to take people out on walks now, and they'll teach you all the things to look out for, how to avoid poisoning yourself and your entire family. It's a great thing to do because you are learning about a kingdom which very few people know anything about. They are so interesting. 5,000 largest species in this country, and they are exquisitely beautiful. And it actually teaches people how interesting they are, how rare some of them are, how beautiful most of them are. And of course, the more we get to know these things, the more people are prepared, the more people get to love them, and the more they will protect them. So if a local, there's a lovely mushroom field or a wood which produces an interesting fungi, and it's sort of set for development, and more people will say, look, really, this is an interesting area, we cannot destroy this. And although I take people out on mushroom forays for food, what I'm really doing is showing them the fungal world and all its beauty.
Some of them are beautiful when you see them growing on trees and things. We want to talk now about the books that you've written. You've written several books. Can you tell us what they are on?
Well, I did four for River Cottage, and I did one on mushrooms, which was my main interest, and then I've spread my wings to the seashore. So I wrote one called The Edible Seashore, and that's all about seaweeds and the shoreline plants and how to catch shrimps and how to put out lobster pots and so on. And then I did one on which is called Hedgerow, which is really all the bits left over from the others, so rose hips and fat hen, blackberries and sloes. And then evidently, they thought they obviously he can write books and he drinks quite a bit, so they gave me the booze book to write. So I wrote the booze book, which is all about homebrew, so wines and cocktails, beer and cider. They were really enjoyable to write. I wrote one really for myself about Latin names. So I'm utterly obsessed by Latin names because I'd learned mushrooms were my first passion, and there were not in those days when I learned there were no common names for the mushrooms, very very few, about 100 common names for about 5,000 species. So I had to learn all the Latin names, and I got to love Latin names, and I wrote a book all about it, how wonderful they are. And I did a book about the natural history of the hedgerow, which is the last one out, and I'm working on another book now.
Oh, really? So what are the sort of things you're looking for in the hedgerow?
The hedgerow. Well, for food?
Yes.
Yes. Hedgerow was a sort of catch-all name, because really you'll find stuff in... often you find really good stuff in odd places, like old building sites, or waste ground, the bottom of your garden, car parks. I'm always going on about car parks being really good places to find things, which
really?
Is pretty surprising. It's this edge habitat. It's a disturbed edge habitat, and it's bright, so you get a lot of plants that love the light. You can find wild fennel grows in car parks. I quite like supermarket car parks, and I've actually picked blackberries in supermarket car parks. They're cheaper than going into the supermarket and paying for them. And you go to get fat hen. I found morels in supermarket car parks growing in the bark, sort of mulch they put on their rose bushes. Oh, talking of roses, car parks are really good for Rosa rugosa, one of my absolute favourite plants. It also grows in hedgerows. It's not a native species. It's a Japanese rose. It's a hedging rose. A lot of people will have it in their gardens or surrounding their gardens, and it produces these superb flowers. They are the most fragrant of the roses, and I picked about half a kilo. I was actually in Denmark over the weekend, and they had a better crop over there. So I sort of filled my hand luggage with Rosa rugosa petals, which I'm going to put in vodka.
Oh.
I had the most fragrant of all the hand luggage on that flight, I can tell you. And it's great if you just get a load of these petals and put them in a kilner jar or whatever, and just pack it in gently. Top the whole thing up with vodka and leave it for 3 days, and then drain it out and squeeze all the petals to get all the good dust out, and you get this amazing drink. It's not the best thing to drink straight. It's a bit like drinking eau de cologne, which I try not to do that. But it's a wonderful addition to a cocktail.
Ah, okay. Oh, it sounds amazing, I must say. Now, can we just talk about the common blackberry for a moment? Because I've been out looking in the hedgerows for blackberries, and this year they have been very, very small.
Oh, well, again, they might be very small where you are. They're very big this year, down here.
Are they?
Yeah, I know. It's not just the season, it's where you are. I think we might have had more rain, just a little bit more rain, because you're in the southeast, so it can be a bit drier over there.
We've had it very dry.
Yeah. No, I found some gorgeous blackberries this year.
Wow, you're making me jealous now.
Oh, yeah.
I've been struggling to get my blackberries, to make my blackberry and apple crumbles.
I've been picking kilos and kilos of blackberries this year. It's just amazing.
You would struggle up this end, honestly, John, because they are tiny, tiny.
Oh.
And quite hard. They're not like the lovely, nice, black, juicy blackberries.
You might be looking at the wrong bramble. It's because they are very variable. And they're not a single species. They're an aggregate. So you get over 300 micro species, and they will all produce slightly different blackberries. And sometimes you get these really big ones, and sometimes you get the ones that never really ripen and are small and hard and sour. I should just wander about a bit.
Well, I do quite a lot of walking, actually, and everywhere I've walked, I haven't found anything really successful yet. But I'll keep going. I'll keep trying. Now, John, we are rather excited because you're going to be coming up to our end of the country in October, and you're coming to Moon Down in Tunbridge Wells.
I am, and I've been going there for 7 years now.
Have
maybe
you?
8 years, I can't remember. One of my favourite spots. This is absolute truth. It is one of the most interesting places I have ever been for fungi. You know, it varies from year to year. It all depends on the weather. But it is so interesting. You get this enormous mix of habitats, and I think we've had 100. I think we've had over 100 species on a 2 day foray. Well, we take two separate forays, one day, one on one day, one on the next. But over the 2 days, we've had over 100 species. You get the most fabulous things there. It's the variety of habitats it provides, which makes it so brilliant. There's pine woods, there's oak, there's open grassland, which is grazed only by sheep. It's quite acid, which is really good for the fungi. Mulch put down, you know, the bark.
Yes.
Quite a lot of that there. That's incredible for fungi, and we get lots of things there. I've had a great place where you can't eat them, but they look amazing. Have you ever seen these? Or the orange peel fungus?
I probably have, but I haven't really realised what it is.
You probably thought it was orange peel. It looks like someone's peeled an orange and chucked it down there, and it's landed orange side up. But it's actually a fungus, and anything up to about 4 or 5 inches in diameter. Brilliant orange, and if you touch it, it's a little puff of spores come out the top.
Oh, really?
Things like that. I think we found bird's nest fungi, lots of rare fungi as well there. It's just the best place.
Oh, well, you're going to be coming there on the 16th and the 17th of October.
That's right.
And that's when people can book to come and see you and go out there looking for your mushrooms and fungi, and you'll be able to put them straight as to what they can and can't eat. So what sort of time does that start then in the day?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
I think it's in the morning.
I just turn up. I think it's 10. It's a whole day, and there's lunch provided. And we go on two walks, and then we go on a walk, then lunch, and then we go out for another walk, and then I lay everything out on tables, and I put the Latin names underneath, and their common names as well, if I know them, and we talk about what we found. Two things very important. I talk about conservation, how to pick sensibly and carefully, and to And perhaps most important for people who turn up, I tell them how not to poison themselves.
Good idea. Good idea on that one. Right, I've got all the information. So it's going to be 16th and 17th of October, and it does start at 10, and you stop for a three-course lunch at midday, which sounds fantastic, and then you go off again, and you return for afternoon tea about 4:30. So that sounds a wonderful, wonderful day. So with the, I'm going to ask you, with the edible finds, do you cook those up?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do cook those up.
So everybody can have a taster?
Yes, they can.
And I'm guessing that the different species taste very different.
Probably not as much as you'd think. There are a few, most of them taste like mushrooms, but, you know.
Not like mushrooms, okay.
But there's one we find at Moondown, which is definitely different, and that is the saffron milk cap. And that is a brilliant orange colour, and it tastes exactly halfway between a mushroom and a carrot.
Okay.
Yeah, nice. It's called Lactarius deliciosus, so that tells you everything you need to know about it.
Yeah. Oh, that's really, really good. Well, it does sound such exciting days, I must say.
No, they're great days. I just love coming to Moondown. My favourite mushrooming spot, really.
Wow. And how many people are normally out there foraging with you?
On those days? I think we have 20.
Do you?
Yeah. Which is nice. That's the right sort of number, because we have party atmosphere as well, so it's a lovely day.
Now, it's also suggested that, you know, if you wanted an unusual gift to give somebody, you could actually get a gift voucher to do this.
That's admin. I don't do admin.
Lisa
at Moondown, she'll sort that out for
you. She'll sort it all out. Now, if anybody is interested in booking, then, or just finding out some more, because the setting is at Bellevue Green near Tunbridge Wells, and the number to call, if you've got pen and paper, is 01892 535 432, or check out the website, www.moondown, that's all one word in lowercase, .co.uk, and then you can find all about it and see if that's something that you would like to do. And I'm sure, John, you've got lots of stories to tell them on their way round.
I've got a lot of stories.
I can imagine. A lifetime of foraging, how could you not? John, thank you so much for talking to us this morning. I find this really interesting. It's definitely something I would actually like to do, actually, so I can feel more comfortable when I'm out walking and finding my mushrooms and fungi. But John, good luck with that. We encourage people to book, because it does sound an awful lot of fun, a great day and something completely different. But it's been interesting talking to you this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Lovely.
It's a great pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.